For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 233, and this week I am very pleased to be joined by a returning guest. Hello, Liam.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
I've been better, as we just talked about off the air. because sports, everybody. Let me tell the people at home.
Yep.
Okay. If you are not a sports fan, don't ever get started with sports, okay? Try something less damaging to your mental and physical health, like heavy drugs, for instance.
Okay. Yep.
Maybe get a gambling addiction, which I have that too. So I'm really in bad. Maybe get into alcoholism. I don't know.
What about anime?
Anime is fine. That's the only thing that brings joy to my life, honestly. At this point, is watching anime.
Yeah,
I'm in the middle of watching Utena, and it is great. I don't know if you've ever seen Utena, but
no, I haven't. No,
go ahead. I was just saying, it's a fantastic show, and it's completely. It's like it's sort of like. If Evangelion was a Yuri, If Evangelion, was a shoujo, not a Yuri. It is sort of Yuri, but also, you know, if Evangelion was a shoujo, that'd be Utena, basically.
Yeah. I've only just started watching High School Girl on your recommendation from last year, and I am getting quite into it. So I feel like I'm about
watching
to go...
what? I'm sorry?
High School Girl.
Oh, yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. I feel like this dark world of anime is about to consume me whole, and I'm kind of here for it. Yeah.
But yeah, sports, fucking bullshit. So let me just explain to people why I'm so upset today. So the Toronto Blue Jays, okay? They are this amazing team that has one big flaw, which is their bullpen fucking sucks. And really, really sucked in like the spring and got a little better, but their bullpen's been bad. But they have this amazing, like, once-in-a-lifetime lineup that they're never going to be able to keep together. They're going to lose, for sure, they're going to lose the Marcus Semien in the offseason, I think. And they, you know, they have a plus 183 run differential, which, like, that is an insane number that they should be the fucking division winners for that kind of number. And instead, they lose a bunch of games down the stretch that they had to win. Last week when they had a four-game trip to Minnesota, and lost two to the Twins, and the Twins are dog shit. So that was when I was like, okay, this isn't going well. And then they had to win two out of three against the Yankees, at least, at home earlier this week, and they lost two out of three. And I was like, okay, so this isn't going well. But then this final three-game set starts, okay? Today's the last day of the MLB season. They're one game behind the Yankees and the Red Sox for the wild card. So they needed to beat Baltimore, or they needed the Yankees to lose to Tampa, or Boston to lose to Washington. Not and. They needed one of those two teams to lose, okay?
Yeah, yep.
When the day started, I was like, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. Because it's like the Rays were starting some awful pitcher who had like a 7 ERA. Because the Rays, the team the Yankees were playing, the Rays did not need to win at all. So I was like, okay, well, they're not, you know, they already beat the Yankees twice. That was already a break. But I can't see them beating the Yankees again today. And then, and Boston's playing Washington, who traded their entire fucking team away. So, you know, at the trade deadline, because they're just nothing now. They're a fucking minor league team with one superstar who everybody walks because it's the only guy you have to worry about now.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, Boston won't be able to do it. So at the start of today, I was, you know, I was not hopeful. I was accepting that the Blue Jays were going to get eliminated. So I put these three games on. I'm watching three games at once. The Blue Jays completely destroy the Orioles. That's not unexpected. I was like, okay, that's, they had to win that game to even have a chance. It's great. They were up like 12-2 and like before the fifth inning or something. So I barely pay attention to that one. And then the Nationals get out to a 5-1 lead against the Boston Red Sox. And that pitcher for the Rays, who fucking sucks, somehow gives up zero runs to the Yankees. The Yankees only had one hit through, I think, like 8 innings. But the problem was Tampa couldn't score either. So it was 0-0 going in the 9th inning. And then the Red Sox come back and tie and win that game against Washington, 7-5. And at the same time, the Yankees beat the Rays in the bottom of the 9th, 1-0. So I had zero hope at the start of the day. My hope went all the way to the top in the middle of the day. It's like, oh, they might actually pull this off. And then it was just to pull the fucking rug out from under me. So the baseball gods just fucking fucked with me today. Where it's like, I wish they just let the Baltimore Orioles score 10 runs on the Blue Jays or something. So I didn't even have to worry about nothing. Blue Jays lost, whatever, it's over. Instead, they let me think all the way until the end that the Blue Jays had a chance. We were going to a tiebreaker tomorrow. And then it's like, oh, yeah, actually, the Nationals are going to remember the Nationals and shit the bed, and the Yankees are going to win a fucking walk-off in the bottom of the ninth. It's okay. Fuck you. Fuck sports. Fuck baseball. I don't know why. Like, again, cocaine would be better for you than getting into fucking baseball. I'm so, and now I'm getting ready to be an absolute clown with the hockey season started. The other sport that I watch, you know, pretty closely. So hockey season starts next week. I'm sure the Rangers and Kings, my two teams, will both be fucking awful. You know, I'm sure I'm getting myself set up for more sadness, but I don't know. I hate sports. I don't know why the fuck I watch them. One of the worst life decisions.
So I have a question and observation. So I've never watched a game of baseball in my life because we don't have, you know, we watch cricket down here. We don't watch baseball. Yeah. And it's, you know, basically the same in terms of like, you know, lots of, I have two questions. So the first question I had is like, what is a run differential?
So that means basically like the they scored more runs than they gave up.
Okay, so it's like you've scored 12 runs
over the over the course of the season. They scored 168 more runs than they gave up.
Gotcha.
I believe that was the number. I'm getting that off the top of my head. It's some absurd number where like they should not even like they should have had a wild card spot easily at minimum. It should never have been like a fucking tie like this tiebreaker bullshit that they couldn't get. I mean, they missed the playoff by one game.
Right.
So,
okay.
Like, literally as close as you can come without making it.
Got it. So you were watching, like, all of these games at the same time?
Yeah, I had Yankees, Tampa on my TV.
Right.
I had Red Sox Nationals on my laptop. And then I had Blue Jays Orioles on my girlfriend's iPad. Because that was the one that was least important. That was the one that was honestly, even though the Jays are my team, that was the least important one to me. Because it's like, I mean, if they can't beat the Orioles today, they don't deserve to be in anyway. And then they took out like a fucking, I mean, they basically went out to like a 9-1 lead in like the second inning or something. That was never really in doubt. But
so you're not like sitting there watching every game intently, every single inning, every single like,
you know, no, strike. I mean, I'm not really looking like, at, I barely looked at the iPad. It was really the TV and the laptop I was going back and forth between. But yeah, and I'm just like muting one, I'm muting the other, just going back and forth. But yeah, it's just all we needed was if Tampa beat the Yankees, it would have been a Yankees Blue Jays tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. If Nationals had beaten the Red Sox, it would have been a Jays Red Sox tiebreaker. If both had lost, it would have been a wacky three-way tiebreaker, which has never happened before.
Yep.
But none of that happened because they just made it look like all that was going to happen to give me personally the maximum amount of pain.
So you go in with no hope. You watch a few games through the season. Your hope goes up and up and up, and you feel like, okay, the Blue Jays are gonna, you know, get to.
No. I go in today with no hope.
You go in today. Sorry, I'm compressing it. Okay.
Yeah. I go in today with no hope. Yeah. Like through six innings or something, they give me hope.
Right.
And then it was just to fuck with me, to pull the rug out at the end. This is all one day. All these emotions.
And you're expecting to have the same for hockey.
No, hockey season, I'm sure, will be awful. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the Rangers were projected to be like third in the Metro in the Athletics projections that came out today, which I'm sure is way too high. I'm sure you're going to be like seventh or something.
So like, I feel like I can see an analog here between this baseball season, this hockey season, and then like every Naito G1 season. Where you go in with no hope, you watch like 5 or 6 matches, and he's going 5-1, and you're like, yes, he's going to win. This is the final of the year. And then he gets knocked out in the last round again.
I mean, I guess I like painful. Because it's
guess
like
pain.
I never really go for the super front runners. I don't know. Like, I'm never, it kind of makes sense for rest. Like, okay, I should by all rights be a Yankee fan. I grew up mostly, you know, in the metro area. I mean, I grew up a lot in New Jersey, and New Jersey doesn't have a baseball team. It's like really hardcore Yankee territory. Unless you get to South Jersey when they love the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yep.
But my dad was a Yankee fan. All my family's a Yankee fan. My girlfriend's a Yankee fan. I just, you know, I'm a contrarian. So I was like, well, I'm going to pick, I like the color blue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like the Blue Jays. So there. I mean, the only local sports team that I picked as like one of my teams, and even though they're my second favorite hockey team, but still, as one of my teams is the New York Rangers, who are the ones who went 54 years between championships.
Yeah.
So, like, set the record, which is going to be broken soon anyway, but like, set the record for longest Stanley Cup drought from 1940 to 1994, and have not won it again since. So, again, I guess I like pain. I can't really
say. You like pain.
Yeah,
okay.
I can't really say much else. But yeah, the Blue Jays, the Blue Jays fuck with me. But they were just such a fun team, too. Like, it really was a fun season. They had, all these home run hitters, I don't know, they were just a bunch of happy people. I can't really describe it, you know, just like to someone, especially someone who doesn't know baseball at all, but just like a really, they had this home run jacket. I love this jacket. Like, they had this jacket that all of them would put on, and it had every country they were all from, you know, like the Dominican Republic and obviously the USA and Canada and all these other countries, like listed on the back in their each native language. It was like really cute. And they were just a very likable team. Like, they would put this jacket on every time someone hit a home run. But I don't know. It was really just a very likable team, and it really fucking sucks that they got eliminated today.
But it's like there's a club. It's like a club that brings everyone in and like really builds a sense of community around everyone who plays and everyone who watches their games. And
they're a really likable team. But they're going to lose one of their best hitters and their two best pitchers in the offseason probably. So
just because of trades and finances.
Because they're expiring. They're free agents. So they can sign wherever they want. Jays will get outbid by the Yankees or whoever the fuck.
Because money always wins any sorts of, you know, sports league. And, you know, Chelsea always wins every fucking Premier League. And
No, they don't. City wins every Premier League.
Well, Chelsea should win every Premier League with, like, how much money they throw around at players. But
No. City spends more money.
Well, do they spend more money?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. I'll pay that.
Chelsea is my one, I guess, front runner team.
Yeah,
but like when to be fair to me, when I was getting into Premier League soccer, every single person I knew was a Manchester United fan. Like this was the peak of United dominating soccer. And they were the only team anyone I knew was a fan of. So I was like, okay, again, I like the color blue. I want to cheer for a team that has a chance to win, but it's not the absolute front runner. So I'm going to go Chelsea. And then Chelsea after that, you know, kind of turned into even more of a superpower, but we're still not the superpower. I mean, you have City.
You got City, so, you got Arsenal.
Arsenal fucking sucks.
All my Premier League knowledge is from like 2003 to 2006 when Arsenal were a power and everyone was in demand.
There was a meme. Do you remember when the Super League was going to happen briefly for like a week or whatever? So there was like a Simpsons meme comparing the start of the Super League to the start of the, you know, to the start of the Stonecutters, I guess, when Homer Simpson's getting put in the Stonecutters. And like Arsenal is Homer Simpson. They're telling Arsenal, like, you know, you have to say, "May we end up with nothing but one star player," and da 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 da. And then everybody else, the other team's like, "Arsenal should have to take a different pledge." And it's like, everybody takes the same pledge. Because, yes, they just have, they have nothing. I mean, they're, you know, they're very much a, not a good team. But I hate Arsenal because Chelsea Arsenal has a big rivalry. But like, it's funny. I was just talking about this with my friends who, again, are mostly Manchester United fans. Last night when we were out, like, it was one of their, it was his birthday. So we were like out celebrating his birthday. And, you know, we were talking about Arsenal fans on our timelines because, like, and again, I'm sure there might be an Arsenal fan listening that I'm offending, but Arsenal fans are so fucking annoying about it. And it's like, they never shut the fuck up about how hard they have it. And I'm just like, I get it. But if you signed up for this in like the last 5 years, which I think most of them did, honestly, then you should have known what the fuck you were signing up for. You were not jumping on a juggernaut here. You fucking signed up to cheer for Arsenal. I don't know what to tell you. It's like, I can complain so much about the Blue Jays, but like at the end of the day, I know the score at the Blue Jays. I know that we're lucky to even be at this point in baseball, the way baseball works. And it's like, you know, you're the Blue Jays of soccer. You don't get to, like, they complain they complain endlessly about how, about the, like, all the money other teams spend, how they never spend any money on this and that. I'm like, you should know what you signed up for. You're Arsenal. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It just feels absurd after a while. It's like, yes, you're like, I get it. You're sad sack. I don't feel like you, I can only feel so bad for you.
Yeah.
But anyway. We won the Chelsea won the Champions League last year. I shouldn't, you know, that was my one good sports thing, I guess, for the fucking decade.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like my dad, he's been a lifelong Arsenal fan for like 40 plus years. And so like, I've seen him go up from like, okay, you know, like back when I was young and like Arsenal weren't doing shit, like through the 2000s and like, you know, his morale would get higher and higher and he'd spend, cause the Premier League games are on here at like 3 or 4 in the morning, so he'd be getting up at like the middle of the night to go and watch those games, and like you'd go to, you know, Old Trafford and, you know, all the field. He did like a month in the UK and went to all the games, went to all the bunch of games, and then over the past 5 or 6 years, I've seen him like slowly descend into absolute abject despair as like Arsenal just keeps making, you know, Arsene Wenger, you know, makes more and more horrible decisions. They keep losing key players and they keep losing key games.
He retired now, I think.
He got, you know, retired? Question mark.
Yeah,
based on some of the results. So it's been a, you know, as someone who, like, I support Leicester, but like very, very casually. So
they're the hipster pick. So
they're the hipster pick. Yeah. Guilty as charged. So
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, seeing Arsenal descend into, you know, irrelevance has been a point of joy for me over the past few years.
I mean, it is fun. Arsenal, maybe calling them the Blue Jays of, I mean, like what you're describing sounds like my dad with the Yankees, where he complains endlessly about the Yankees. And I just want to be like, cause today he said something like, "I don't know why I'm a Yankee fan. This fucking team." I'm just like, "Dad, you have seen the fucking Yankees win like 15 championships. I don't ever want to hear you complain. Okay." The Blue Jays won 2 titles when I was like 6 years old. I don't even remember it, and I wasn't even a fan yet. So I don't want to hear you talk about how hard you have it as a Yankee fan. They act like, I mean, that's what your dad sounds like, but really, I mean, the Yankees of Premier League are obviously United.
Yeah.
It's the same thing where they're now, you know, just not any good anymore. But like, I don't know, but what you describe your dad sounds like my dad. And it's just like, I don't want to hear you complaining. Like, you guys won everything. Like, I don't, like, oh, you haven't won since 2009. Oh, there are 12-year-olds who never saw the New York Yankees win a championship. Ha, my fucking heart breaks for you. And it's just such stupid bullshit. But like, give me, if you guys need to, like, for my dad, it's over. Like he can never, like, every time he complains, I'm always going to make fun of him because he saw too many championships. If you're a Yankees fan who got in like 2005 or something, you've got like 50 more years before I can ever even come close to feeling bad for you. If you go 50 more years without a championship, maybe I can feel a little bad, but you still saw them win in 2009. So I don't, I want to hear nothing. The same thing like with the, you know, the LA Kings are my favorite hockey team. We won two championships in 2012 and 2014, so I will never complain about the Kings again. I mean, that's it. It's the same thing with Naito. They bring it back to
wrestling. I was just going to say that. Yeah, I was literally waiting for the moment to...
I saw Naito win the Double Dome, so I'm never going to complain about his booking. It's just, it's over. They won the big one. Yeah. You can't... Once you win the big one, even to me, even once... Like, you lose your rights to complain for at least 20 years. Like, that's it. Okay? I can complain about the Blue Jays until I see them win it. I cannot complain about the Kings. I sure as fuck can't complain about Chelsea. I've seen them win two Champions Leagues with, you know, mid-season manager replacements. Which is like, I don't know how the fuck that happened. You know, I can complain about the Rangers, I guess. But, you know, no one wants to hear someone complain about their second favorite team anyway.
No,
but
exactly.
Like, but the Blue Jays, I can, you know, I can complain about them, but I cannot complain. And I can't complain about Naito. That's it. Like, it's over.
So you can't complain about Naito, but I can still complain about Jay White. That's what I'm hearing?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Well, you're going to really complain when he goes to WWE in January.
Oh, fucking. So. don't get me started. Seeing Big Jamie go to the Fash would really fucking upset me.
Yeah,
or even to AEW, I you know, because I don't watch American wrestling, so like he could do the best shit in the world in AEW, but because I don't watch it, like, sorry.
Yeah, AEW's been fun, but I mean,
sure.
I keep waiting for this run to be over because, like, it feels like it kind of feels like the thing that I don't know. Like every time I do get into AEW, and I do think they've been really good lately. They end up doing something where like the shoe drops and it's not fun for me anymore. I don't know what that's going to be, but like last time, you know, leading up to, you know, in the early part of this year, it was the Revolution paper, which I thought was absolutely fucking dog shit. And it just completely soured me on the company. And I stopped watching for months after that. And, you know, so far this is the longest I have ever continuously enjoyed AEW. If you go back to like when
seven
they
months.
First, no, I don't even think it's that long. I think it's like 4 months.
Okay. So
I think they moved. It's when they first moved back to Wednesday night when they had to go to Saturdays and they had those terrible shows during the NBA preemption. I think that was July. It might have been June. I don't know.
Somewhere, four or five months.
And then, you know, I went to Grand Slam and enjoyed it. I got tickets to the show in December, but like, you know, they're always a company I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop with. And they still, even when I really enjoy them, they still book like the most dog shit finishes in wrestling. Like they right up there with WWE for like the worst fucking finishes. And that's always their Achilles heel for me where I'm just like, I don't like you guys just book like sometimes you guys book like absolute dog shit. But anyway, I mean, the actual shows are, you know, enjoyable and they have enough good wrestlers now and all that. But, you know. It's not American wrestling will never be my favorite format of wrestling either, obviously. So, you know,
yeah, and it's always
going to have a disadvantage.
Yeah, it's on during the middle of the day for me, so I can't really watch it while I'm working. And you know, with all the Japanese wrestling's happening in you know an hour or 2 hours away from my local time, it's just like okay, if I have X amount of hours in a week to watch really good AEW or watch kind of bad All Japan shows, I guess I'm going to watch the kind of bad All Japan shows.
Yeah, I mean, All Japan's been good lately.
Yeah, I mean, good. Yeah, I'm wait, but like that, I have the same thing you're describing with AEW with All Japan. I'm waiting for like something to happen where the suffering begins again, and somehow we get another year long Suwama reign, and I suffer.
Yeah. I guess we finally transitioned to wrestling, so that's good.
So
before I get to the first of these two shows we're going to talk about, I just need to let everybody know, of course, that the Wrestling Omakase Patreon is only $5 a month. And right now it is obviously the best value you can get in the wrestling Patreon world because I am doing daily audio of the Grade 1 Climax and the N1 Victory that just concluded. So basically there's like a show going up every fucking day pretty much. So, you know, obviously you get a lot for your $5. I do in-depth reviews of every single match, you know, even these special singles matches on the A block side, the Naito replacement ones. And, you know, we get into a lot of different, you know, like what makes the match good, what makes the match bad, what makes booking bad. I really tore the fuck into night eight, you know, the yesterday's show. That was like simultaneously my least favorite episode recorded in a long time. But also when I listened back to it, I did like it. So I don't always listen back to my stuff, but I wanted to like hear what that sounded like because it was such a miserable show to talk about. But I thought I did a good job ripping into it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I will plug that one specifically, the night eight review. But yeah, every single night that's not covered on a free episode of the show obviously is covered on the Patreon, either on a standalone tournament audio or, of course, we only do every other week for free. The other week is a Patreon exclusive full episode. So it would have been covered on one of those, perhaps. We also covered the All Japan Korakuen on last week's episode, too. So not just G1 and M1, we got that covered, too. And you can listen to everything, every single other thing we ever recorded. If you've never signed up for it before, that includes the Tokyo Dome main events. I went through the entire 1990s for that. And we'll resume that closer to the end of the year, of course. But, you know, we're through every single 1990s Tokyo Dome. The Naito Tanahashi matches, Okada Tanahashi matches, Naito Ishii matches. All of those are covered in chronological order. You know, tons of other stuff on there. Full-length episodes. Again, every other week when there's no free episode, there's a full-length episode exclusive to the Patreon. So just tons and tons and tons of audio on there. And again, all of it is only $5 per month. And it's the start of a month right now. It's October 3rd as I'm recording this. So obviously you get your full value for the month. Plus, you know, you, like I said, you can always go back and listen to anything from the past as well. So it's at patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. I hope you'll consider signing up and check out the great audio that we have on there for you. All right.
It's great. I can confirm it.
Oh, yeah. You are a subscriber.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. Liam likes it. Liam gives it the thumbs up.
Which might not be, yeah. Depending how much weight you put in that.
Yeah. Well, Liam, you're a Leicester fan, right? That's your soccer team. So I guess that's... It's good for hipsters. That's what you're saying. It's the hipster pick of Patreon. I mean, look, I am not going to sit here and say we are the most successful Patreon out there, but Jesus Christ, the Voice of Wrestling Slack was listing off some of the other Patreons out there, and I never feel more successful with mine than when they start listing off some of the other ones. I'm like, somehow hovering between 50 and like 65, depending on the week. Depending on the month, doesn't seem so bad when these people are doing like eight. Mm-hmm. And it's like some big names too.
Yeah.
But like six patrons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
There was one name I know who used to run a company that was fairly successful in the 2000s, early 2010s. And I think they have like, what, 12 patrons?
Something like that? Krakenbus?
Oh, I couldn't confirm or deny that.
Okay. I think does he have like that many? I thought it was like six or something.
It's something ridiculously small for his role in the wrestling ecosystem.
Yeah, and there's like a bunch of other ones. Like, there's a whole sites that have like three. Actually, I'm not gonna name names and make fun of anybody directly. But yeah, I don't know. I never, my Patreon is it's a nice little side hobby, and it has a lot more than a lot of other people, I have to say that. So,
and the best part about it is you don't have to subject yourself to Raw or SmackDown reviews.
that is very true.
Yeah.
I do not have to watch. I mean, watching Night 8 of the G1 was pretty bad, but I can't imagine it's even 1/100th of watching an episode of Monday Night Raw. So there you go. All right. So let us get into the first G1 show we're going to talk about here. Well, the first show we're going to talk about, which is the G1 show. Night 9 of the G1 from today, Sunday, October 3rd. At the Aichi Prefectural Gymnasium in Nagoya. One thing that's hurt the shows lately is these crowds have been utter dog shit.
Yeah.
And like, for the people who, again, I went on this rant during my Night 8 Patreon audio, but I might as well do it on the free feed too, where more people will hear it. If you are one of these people who logs onto Twitter and says, clap crowds don't matter, I can't even hear a difference in clap crowds, how can anybody claim they can tell who's over based on clap crowds, all these other trash takes I've seen the past year and a half, all I want you to do is watch the first two nights of the G1, either one, night one or two in Osaka, and then watch either night 8 or night 9, preferably night 8, because this crowd was not good either, but they did get a little into some stuff. Night 8 from Hamamatsu, which was a dog shit crowd even before COVID. Hamamatsu did not need COVID-19 protocols to be a horrible crowd. They had lots of practice already.
Yeah.
So if I want you to watch night 1 or 2 and then watch night 8 or 9 back to back, and then fucking tell me that clap crowds can't make a difference, or there's no such thing as a good clap crowd, all sort of bullshit. Because, man, these fucking people go long stretches where their hands don't work, apparently, and it sure as hell makes a fucking difference. So
it's also like, so you know that thing where some people watch shows on mute or on very low volume? And I think that's like kind of, you know, not to be rude about it, but I think it's like kind of psychopathic, because I'm like, like all of the, you know, crowd noise and crowd reaction is so key to this form of entertainment. You know, having an audience that's engaged and showing their engagement is what wrestling is all about. And so you can actually see, you know, it actually really impacts on my enjoyment of wrestling shows compared to like that night 1, night 2, where they had, or even like the N1 final we're going to talk about later. You know, having a really engaged clap crowd that's making noise and, you know, engaged in what's happening actually really impacts for me on my enjoyment of, like, you know, what's happening and like being able to really focus in on what's happening inside the ring.
Yeah, so, no, I agree. I will say I agree to an extent. When I watch a match like the last two matches we got here on night 9, like, it really struck me watching Zach and Ishii, where like the crowd was pretty fucking silent for most of that match. But like, if a match is that good, I can still enjoy it. Now, obviously, a hot crowd of any kind, even a hot clap crowd, would have elevated even further, probably. But like, if the ring work is as good as like as Zach and Ishii were doing in that match, you know, it's still enjoyable for me. Like, that kind of match is, you know, it really sums up why, for all the other issues with New Japan right now, for not even just the clap crowds, but the horrible booking at times and, you know, some of the other bullshit, that I will continue to watch it, because at the end of the day, they still give me, you know, high quality ring work with about, I don't want to say more consistency than anybody else, but like certainly as much consistency as anybody, for sure.
Yep.
So when at the end of the day, that is a big thing. But yeah, for sure, that having a engaged clap crowd makes a huge difference compared to a non-engaged clap crowd. I think that's very clear as we hit these kind of mid G1 doldrums here. So this show opened up with Yoshinobu Kanemaru defeating Kosei Fujita in 7:34, the Boston Crab. This was, of course, your scheduled non-tournament match. Very normal Young Lion stuff here. I thought a little more exciting, though, than yesterday's Kanemaru Oyawa match, which a lot of Kanemaru working over his leg just wasn't very exciting at all. I went I went 2.5 on that one. On this one, I thought it was a little better, so I went 2.75.
Yeah, I think it was like very basic stuff. That like, these Young Lions are still so new and so fresh out of the dojo that there's not really much you can do with them at this point, but you need to get them the reps. So, the one thing I've noticed about both of these new lions is like, they wrestle like heels and they look like heels. So like, I don't know if that's like a change in the training or a change in like how they're being perceived or like, you know, anything like that, but it just, they feel like, it's Uemura and Tsuji always felt like babyface leaning young lions. So these feel like heel leaning young lions, if that makes sense. But, aside from that, yeah, just like really basic, you know, stuff. Boston Crab finish, no big spots.
Match number 2, the special singles match to replace the planned Naito and Yano match from this night. The Toru Yano defeats Bushi in 7:14 with a schoolboy. First of all, so Toru Yano's been bringing out this bag a lot lately, and he used to like cover Bushi's head. Bushi brought out a Louis Vuitton bag to try to counter Yano's bag. That was very funny. I laughed.
That was pretty good. Like,
If you don't get the joke, Bushi loves fashion. That's pretty much the whole joke. And he brought that up. Like, when he brought that out, it was like, well, that makes way too much sense.
Yep.
They both get blinded, but then the referee just pulls the bags off both their heads. And it's just like, is that easy? Why can't they pull the bags off their own heads?
Yeah, they're not like tying the bags around him. It's just like the bags are hanging loosely on their heads, and neither of them are smart enough or have the thought to actually just pull the bags off.
Yeah, idiots. Very bizarre. We get the usual nonsense you expect here. Bushi ties Yano to the barricade using a towel. Yano escapes, makes it back to the ring. Yano, in turn, ties Bushi's mask to the barricade, but he stole a page from Great O'Khan's book and he pulled scissors out and cuts his way free. Now, some people hate that spot. I think, it doesn't make any sense that he would have scissors. I'm like, what does it make sense about that? If you were going to wrestle Toriano, a wrestler who loves to tie things, why the fuck wouldn't you bring scissors?
Yeah,
like, I think that's perfectly logical. It's like, well, he thought ahead. I don't know. That spot does not bother me at all, honestly.
It's also it also responds to that criticism of like people don't watch each other's matches. It's like that shows you people watch the matches, like, you know, other round matches and learn from them.
Then the ref gets blinded by one of these sacks, so he misses. Mm-hmm. He misses Bushi rolling up Yano for the win. So Yano then low blows Bushi while he's taking the sack off the ref's head, and schoolboys Bushi for the win. This was like amusing enough. I don't know. It was definitely short, which I appreciated. I gave it the perfectly average 2.5. I definitely didn't hate it. So, you know, it wasn't painful like that Yano Kenta match. So,
oh, I disagree on that. I think that Yano Kenta match was pretty funny, but maybe that's just me.
That one really pissed me off for some reason. I feel like half the shit with Yano is like, what kind of mood are you in? And at this point in my day, the Blue Jays had not yet tore my heart out, so I was still in a good mood. So there you go.
And Bushi kind of sucks, so putting Bushi in with Huge and Yano makes sense in terms of like having a matchup, makeup match.
I always think Bushi sucks is too strong. I think he's fine.
I think he kind of sucks. I don't think he sucks.
Okay,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Feel like people are way too hard on him. Like, I don't think he's awful or anything. Just think he's like a perfectly average wrestler. I don't know. Maybe slightly below average. But he's like, what? Okay, with Bushi, like, first of all, he's never pushed very hard, and second of all, like, if you're going to be like an average wrestler or whatever, like, if you could post like pictures in black and white, your hands making this weird vagina-esque like hand sign doing everything. Like, he has a certain charm to him that a lot of other bad wrestlers don't have. So I enjoy Bushi.
He's inoffensive. I could take some Bushi sometimes.
Inoffensive is a great name. Great word.
Yeah,
great word for it. Match number three, our first tournament match of the night. Kenta defeats the Great Okan in 1939 with a schoolboy. So Kenta goes up to 4-2 and Okan drops down to 4-2. I thought Kenta was like, Kenta was like very amused by Okan. He was like trying hard not to laugh during Okan's entrance. And then he like briefly mocked some of the entrance mannerisms like before the match. Like, it was very brief, so you may have missed it, but like
I got that job.
I guess I meant the audience. Oh, anybody may have missed it. Yeah. I knew you saw it, Liam, because you had the eyes of a hawk. But people at home, it was like very, very brief. But yeah, he was like kind of like doing a little shakes, and I thought that was funny. So before the match, Kenta tells Okan he has to do like a very, very humiliating bow to him before if he loses, and Okan just kind of laughs this off. There was some fun mat work here. Okan especially, he looked like vicious on the mat, which is kind of hard to do at times. Like, he looks like he's actually hurting his opponent instead of just, you know, putting him in random holds. He won't break his holds when Kenta's in the rope, and he does a great job looking like he's going to break somebody's arm or leg or something. Mm-hmm. And I really liked his, like, takedowns here. He's very smooth at mat transitions. He got a head and arm choke at one point. Yep. But Kenta kept like pulling on his braid to try to escape. But then he finally did make the ropes, but Okan just kind of like beats on him before he actually lets go. There's this really vicious exchange of slaps soon after the 15-minute call.
Yep.
They just slap the piss out of each other. Mm-hmm. And then Kenta finally puts him down to win that exchange. He goes for go to sleep. Okan escapes using his claw. He goes for the eliminator. Kenta hits a counter knee in midair. That looked cool. And goes for go to sleep again, but Okan escapes again, gets the claw back on, and tries to lift Kenta back up for eliminator, but Kenta then bumps Okan to the ref on purpose. Kenta hits Okan with some hard chair shots while the ref is down. He puts on Okan's hat. That was funny.
Yep.
And then he heads up top, double stomps the chair into Okan's midsection, breaking the chair in the process. The ref is somehow still down, so Kenta pulls a baseball bat out, but this time when Kenta tries to swing the bat at Okan, Okan catches the bat in mid-blow, but the referee revives, sees Okan with the bat, and despite the fact that I don't think Great Okan has cheated once in his entire New Japan career so far. The ref sees the bat and is like, you definitely used that bat, huh? And the argument allows Kenta to schoolboy Okan from behind with the tights for the win. Mm-hmm. This was like every Kenta match in this tournament so far for me, where I'm enjoying it a ton, and then the bullshit starts and it sucks. And I guess I just have to learn to accept this shit from Kenta at this point. But like, it's okay. When Kenta first got to New Japan, I understood why they leaned so heavily in the bullshit, because he looked like he didn't have his legs under him at all. Now he's having these really enjoyable matches, these really enjoyable straight wrestling matches with these opponents, and then just doing bullshit for no reason. He does not need the bullshit. Like, it just feels completely unnecessary for him. I get he's a heel and he's in Bullet Club, but like, other Bullet Club members are not doing anything in this tournament. I mean, you know, yes. Yujiro is barely cheating. Tonga Loa isn't really cheating at all. Tom and Tonga, I don't know. I really wish he would just drop the bullshit, because he's already turned into like a great wrestler in New Japan. He doesn't need that bullshit at all. I'll go 3.5 on balance, because everything leading up to the end was a lot of fun. But it easily could have been 4 stars without all that cliche bullshit at the end. I hate the spot where the ref like sees the guy with the bat and argues with him. It's like, come on. You know who exactly... It's Great Okan and Kenta. When has Great Okan ever used a baseball bat? Just, I hate that fucking spot. Yeah.
Someone made a comparison for like modern 2021 Kenta to Eddie Guerrero. I saw that and I kind of thought about it for a minute. I was like, no, that's not right. And then I thought about it for a minute. I was like, actually... You know, entertaining matches, and then the bullshit happens, and then, you know, he interferes, and like, it's entertaining. It's like, it's the sort of thing where it's like, it's not like the evil bullshit where it like takes the wind of a match. It's like funny, weird, sort of like comedy, you know, shenanigans. And so, like, I kind of thought about that. I was like, okay, if this is going to be what Kenta is now, he's not going to put on these 4.5-star matches or anything like that. He's going to just like play into his character. I guess I can kind of accept that. I kind of accept that leaning into this big.
Yeah, but the problem I have with that comparison, and I guess with that scenario, though, is I feel like he almost is putting on like really great in-ring matches until the bullshit starts. I'm just like, it doesn't feel like he even needs this anymore. But I don't know. Maybe it's just what he wants to do. I have no idea.
Yeah, I feel like he's like trying to play into like this really distinct character. Well, not distinct. I don't know. But like, he's got like this idea for this character he wants to play of like, okay, he can, you know, work a good match, but then also have these shenanigans at the end to show that, like, he doesn't need these shenanigans, but he just wants to put them in to, like, sort of, I don't know, give that sort of, like, to stay heel or something like that. And yeah. I don't know if that's working, because it's entertaining. I feel like the other thing about Okan that I was sort of thinking about, so, one, he's only been wrestling for 4 years, and he's already this good, which is a little freaky. He's really
I know so many people who insist he's horrible, and I don't understand it. Like Quinlan. Quinlan will insist he's bad, and I'm just like, you have Meltzer brain. I don't understand. Like, why? Yeah. What about Great Okan is bad? I just never understood it. Like, he comes out, he does awesome holds. He looks like a very unique. I mean, he has this very unique character. He plays it to perfection. He looks like a badass. Like, I don't really get it. Like, what is bad about this? It's one of the more bizarre takes out there at this point.
I think some of these matches are a little hit and miss. Like, there are some cases where, like, he'll have an occasional match where it falls flat. But I'm actually I don't mind that.
Who doesn't, though?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, like, the character point, like, you know, I think is, like, really, really important. If someone said to you in 2018, oh, this great Okan guy, like, Oka's going to come back from RevPro. He's going to come back with the same weird gimmick he's currently working in that's bombing. And it's going to be one of the best characters in the company. You'd go like, no, that's fucking stupid. You're on drugs. But it's like, no, actually, he has come back and he's made this weird, you know, off-the-wall character really, really engaging. And makes me want to, like, even if the matches aren't, like, you know, 4.5-star work rates, you know, bonanzas, I want to watch everything he does. And I want to see how many, you know, I want to see how he faces everyone in that B block who he hasn't faced yet. He's fresh, he's new, he's engaging. So, I'd love the Okan.
Me too. And he loves anime girls, so that's another favor. Although he and I really don't have the same taste in anime at all. Like, he loves, you know, like these Bushiroad, like, which I'm sure they love. Like, these Bushiroad, like, idol girl shows, which has never been my thing, really. But yeah, he loves those kind of shows, and it's not really my thing at all. Yeah. But anyway, but you know, God bless him. Everybody's got to love whatever they love, and he loves anime girls doing idol things. So,
I'm not going to yuck his yum.
Exactly. I don't know what that means. What is that? Is that like a saying down there?
Yeah, yeah. It's like you don't yuck someone else's yum. It's like you don't...
Oh, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
Once I thought about it for a second. Yeah. But yes, after the match, Kenta tries to get Okan to give him that humiliating bow.
Yep.
Okan starts doing it, but then just gives him the eliminator instead. That was awesome. Just like, fuck you.
Yep.
He's like, I'm not bowing to your cheating ass. Mm-hmm. Kenta has
the best faces. He has the best fucking facial expressions.
Yeah, he's just like so disgusted after.
Yeah.
Match number four. Tonga Loa defeating Yujiro Takahashi in 12:36 with the ape shit. Tonga goes to 2-3 and Yujiro drops down to 2-3. So all four of the people here, Yujiro, Tonga, and their 2 seconds, Peter and Jado, they did the two sweep before the match. So I guess everyone was on the same page from the start at least. But Tonga and Yujiro both take turns like swerving on each other. Another two sweep though, they just kick the other one in the gut instead. So you know that was your early, I guess, you know, got a turn. At least they didn't do the fucking lay down for me bullshit that we saw from Evil the night before. Yeah. Tonga Loa at one point busts out a standing moonsault. That's like, look, this sucks for Tonga Loa because like you're in the same company as Jeff Cobb,
yeah,
a way bigger dude who can do a standing moonsault. So it's like this impressive move, you know, in a vacuum, like just kind of can't compare. So you know, it just sucks for Tonga. The match settles into being a bit boring during Tonga Loa's heat period. Just not much happening there. And Yujiro's selling, I thought, was really not good at all here in this match. Like, at some point, Tonga has him in some kind of wacky rest hold. And Yujiro, you know, the camera's pointed right at Yujiro's face. So Yujiro's looking straight in the camera. And he's making this face where he looks like... I honestly don't know what he was... Like, he's trying to act like he's in pain. But it looks more like he's trying to act surprised. I don't know how to describe, like, he had this big, wide-open face, and it's like, it looked more like somebody, it honestly looked like somebody was told they're going to have a surprise party, and they're now showing up at their surprise party, trying to act like they're surprised, because they don't want everybody to feel bad that they already knew about the surprise party. I mean, that's what his face looked like. So, somehow, trying to act like he's in pain turned into a very unconvincing trying to act like he's surprised. It's very bizarre. But Yujiro's little comeback after the 5-minute mark, that was better. And that's definitely where he excels at playing underdog. He does a nice tope to the floor, too. That got some, you know, gasping out of the crowd, which, you know, this crowd was not exactly making a ton of noise. So Peter at one point, like, her dancing was just kind of funny. Like, she looks... she's like dancing with the clapping or something, but like, I don't know. It's not often you see a woman as attractive as her look like an absolute dork. And she kind of looked like a huge dork the way she was shaking around. I'm like, you're supposed to be a dancer, aren't you? Like, this was not very good dancing. Like, I don't know. Maybe they weren't giving her a good enough beat or something, but it was very weird.
I guess it's hard to dance in heels that high. I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Too. I mean, people do it apparently, but.
Well,
like, you know, at certain establishments. Yujiro and Tonga, they go back and forth looking for their signature moves. Yujiro eventually lands the Olympic Slam and Miami Shine for near falls. Tonga comes back, though, nails the ape shit out of nowhere, and that gives him his first real win in the tournament, because remember his 2 points were the Naito, you know, forfeit match. But yeah, this was fine. Not anything more than that. I went 3. Maybe that's a little generous even. It was boring early. Yujiro's selling was goofy, but I thought it picked up enough down the stretch to call it a fine little match. I don't think it was bad, certainly, but like, you know, both these guys have had better matches in this tournament so far already. So, you know, what are you going to do?
I thought they had a good idea of like Yujiro trying to counterplay Tonga Loa and trying to use his momentum against him a lot. I thought like that wrist clutch back into the Olympic Slam was kind of cool, but like, this is an okay match that the crowd did not give a single shit about. So, yeah.
Tonga Loa helped Yujiro up afterward, even kind of helped him in the back. So, no signs of Bullet Club dissension there, at least. So,
interesting. Bullet Club is fine.
All the evil and, God, who the fuck was he facing the night before?
Chase Owens?
I'm sorry?
Chase Owens?
Oh, yeah, that. Evil and Chase. Yeah. All that stuff the night before. Yeah. You know, this was a much more amicable end, I guess, than Evil and Chase the night before. Where Chase gave him the 2-sweep, but looked so angry about it. Mm-hmm. Up next, we have the first of two matches that kind of saved the show. I mean, nah, maybe that's too strong. The local card wasn't that bad. But Tomohiro Ishii defeats Zack Sabre Jr. in 1840 with the vertical drop brainbuster. Ishii moves up to 3-3, and Zack suffers his first loss of the tournament. He is now 4-1.
Disgusting.
Zack gets the European clutch on Ishii, very nearly pins him with the European clutch in the first minute or two of the match. It was a very, very close near fall. Really cool ending to a fun little opening sequence. Ishii chops the hell of Zack in the corner, but Zack finally comes back with this nasty looking arm stretch using the ropes. Ishii starts working over Zack's leg a bit to try to counter Zack working over his arm, but then he ends up like collapsing to the mat for hitting an elbow. Zack gets his swinging DT out of the corner. Ishii no-sells it, hits this huge shoulder block that just sends Zack flying. Zack pops right up from that, hits a PK, but Ishii no-sells that and hits a huge lariat to finally end a very wild sequence. The match keeps up a high pace. You get several near falls off of flash pins, and Zack gets a great high-speed front suplex to counter Ishii trying for the brainbuster. And then as soon as Ishii hits the mat, he goes straight into looking for first a Kimura and then a cross arm breaker. So that was cool. He then switches to a triangle. Ishii sells like he's going out.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But he's finally able to recover and just starts stepping on Zack's face to get him to break it. That was awesome. They've done that before, I think, in the previous matches, but it's a great spot. Zack tries to immediately hit the Zack driver as they stand back up, which, again, I thought was a cool counter from his perspective, where it's like, you know, he's, you know, just the submission didn't work, so he goes right for his, you know, his high-impact move. Ishii, though, hits a huge headbutt to counter it. Zack no-sells that, hits a high kick to Ishii's arm. Ishii shrugs that off and hits another huge lariat to put him down. At this point, this was where the match really just fucking owned. We get another big lariat from Ishii. Zack kicks out at two, and Ishii then nails the brainbuster. And that is, of course, the pin to give Zack his first loss of the tournament. This is pretty much as awesome as you would expect. You know, I went 4.25 here. If anything, it felt like it could have gone way longer. The match ended somewhat abruptly, and I would have been down for more of this match, which, you know, you don't always say that after a big New Japan match, honestly. Both these guys, you know, Zack and Ishii, really helping to carry A block. Not exactly unexpected. And you could maybe argue Ishii going back to lariat so much with all the arm work Zack did was like bad selling or psychology. But I thought Ishii did such a great job, you know, selling his own arm pain, even after he hit every move, that I really didn't mind it at all. So, you know, I enjoyed this match. Was awesome.
I think these two are like the perfect opponents for each other in terms of like two people who have like very distinct styles, who are very different in terms of physical, you know, appearance and physical like structure and size, who like, you know, play off each other really well. You have like Ishii coming with the high impact strikes, you know, and being able to withstand anything that Zack can throw at him, and then Zack like basically whimper, like, you know, falling to a single strike and, you know, having to fight back with the submissions. And like, that's a really interesting contrast. Like, the only criticism I can have for this is like these two have faced off like a bunch of times before, and, you know, because they are so distinct and they are so different from each other, and we've seen this, you know, a number of times before, like, you know what you're getting coming into this. That being said, it fucking ruled. It still was like an awesome, awesome match. So yeah. Highly recommended. I've got to give criticism to Ishii for trying to, you know, screw the rightful G1 winner again by beating him, but hey, one year.
This, by the way, evened up the career series. So it was 3-2. Yeah, it was 3-2 Zack entering this match. So it is now 3-3. Well, they kind of talked about this, like, so Zack had gotten all of his wins in the past in the G1. So if you look at it, Zack beat, or two of his three. So yeah. Zack beat him in the 2017 G1, he beat him in the 2018 G1, and he won their last meeting, which is where he won the Red Pro title back from him at Wrestle Kingdom 13, January 4th, 2019. So this was their first meeting in almost, you know, like almost 3 years. Yeah. Ishii's two wins came in the U.S. title tournament, their first ever meeting in July 2017. And then he beat him in New Orleans during WrestleCon 2018 to win the Rev Pro title. So this was Ishii's first ever win against Zack in a G1. And it was, you know, like I said, they evened up the career series at 3-3. Mm-hmm. The main event here was Kota Ibushi defeating Shingo Takagi in 23-57 with the Kamigoe. Ibushi goes to 4-2, and Shingo drops to 3-2. Shingo and Ibushi, they definitely start slow here. This was paced the way you could sort of tell they were going long. I believe this was easily Ibushi's longest match since coming back from his illness. So, you know, it was good to see him kind of work his way into a 24-minute match here and maybe get into that pace again. Because, you know, I think people were kind of wondering, like, okay, can he just not go long? Because he's doing a lot of, like, you know, the match with Tanahashi at the Dome, I think, went 19 minutes and
17:47.
Oh, there you go. Even shorter than I thought. Maybe it was like his last big G1 main event went like 19 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. So, you know, just like, it was good to see him go a little longer here. Ibushi at one point hits like this really nice snap Rana from a standing position that sends Shingo all the way to the floor. So Kota can hit a really nice acai moonsault. And he does it off the top rope instead of the, instead of the second rope, like we usually say. Of course, he lands right on his neck in the process. Not very surprising. Then we get a very hard strike exchange between Ibushi's kicks and Shingo's chops. But Shingo puts a stop to that just before the 15-minute call with a nice dragon screw. And I love that he lifted that move. Because from Tanahashi, because first of all, it kind of continues his, his whole like, you know, move thief character he has going in New Japan. But more importantly, he's the fucking dragon. So it makes a lot of sense that he has.
Oh, yeah.
The dragon screw. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ibushi hits a very nice short arm lariat at one point, but Shingo no sells it, hits his own lariat. Ibushi takes this huge flip bump, then kind of still pops right back up, and then German suplexes Shingo, but Shingo no-sells it, hits his big running elbow to the back of Ibushi's head as Ibushi's sitting there kind of like grinning like an idiot over what he just did or something. It was very weird, honestly. He was just kind of sitting there grinning like, yeah, look what I just did. Shingo then just like fucking murders this dude with his lariat from the left. Like the moment Ibushi avoided the pumping bomber. That was a really, really cool spot. He then hits Made in Japan for a close near fall. But Ibushi comes back with the Bamaye, hits his sit out last ride for a two count just before the 20-minute call. He tries for Kamigoe, but Shingo is too strong. He locks his arm together to keep Ibushi from pulling him in. He headbutts him in the chest a couple times, hits this great counter punch right to the face. And then a huge headbutt. Then he, like, again, I don't know if this was meant to be a move thief thing. I kind of feel like it was. He hits this big knee to, like, a kneeling Ibushi's head. Mm. And I don't know if I've ever seen him hit a knee attack at all before. So no. I guess you could argue, yeah.
It's weird.
Kind of adds to his move-stealing gimmick, which I really like. Mm-hmm. He hits a huge pumping bomber. Ibushi, of course, takes this enormous bump for it. That gets a two count. And then Shingo starts battering Ibushi with the forearms from each side. But Ibushi answers with a huge palm strike, hits this really cool high kick. Like he almost did like a handstand to hit the high kick. It looked really cool as like a counter to charging Shingo. Then he just grabs him and nails him at Kamigoe. He covers, but Shingo somehow kicks out too. And this Nagoya crowd that hadn't been great all night, as we went over already, just reacts really big for that. So that was cool. Kota tries for Kamigoe again. Shingo catches it though, pulls him straight up into Last of the Dragon. Ibushi escapes with the reverse Rana. He hits a huge running knee to Shingo's face, then the reverse Kamigoe to the back and the Kamigoe to the front, and that's the pin. Awesome main event. It started a little bit slow, but you know, I thought it was 4.25 easy again. I kind of even thought about 4.5. They really turned it on up down the stretch, add in some stuff that was kind of new for them. But, you know, the early portion is just a little too dull for me to go that high. So it was 4.25 here. And, you know, I think it was behind at least one other 4.25 match that's happened in the G1 already. But this is just your prototypical awesome New Japan main. Again, this is the exact kind of match that explains why, for all the other issues, both these matches, I already kind of went through this, but like why I still watch New Japan and stick with the promotion, because, you know, matches like this are still worth it. And they still give you more of these than, you know, certainly more than AEW does. And I can't call, like, AEW obviously delivered with that Kenny Danielson match last week, but they, you know, you have to go like every 3 months maybe for a match, you know, close to that good. Whereas, you know, you obviously get a lot more than in New Japan. I can't call this anything other than a very good show, thanks to these two matches. And I liked Okan vs. Kenta too. I'm sorry, you can go ahead.
Yeah, I was like, I've got some thoughts in this match.
Sorry. Yeah. You can go ahead. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have read that part of it, I guess.
Oh, good. I kind of hated this match, honestly. I am like, okay, so Shingo first. I think Shingo's great. You know, he's had a really great G1. He's been like, you know, really, really, you know, carrying this block a lot, and like basically no complaints about him. Fucking Kota Ibushi.
You're like the number one Ibushi hater, so.
Well, I just, okay, so I feel like he has peaked in this company. And he will never reach that height again. And like I don't know. Like, I think his G1 has been kind of like, I don't want to say crap, but it's like very below par and very below standard, I think. And I feel like this illness he had has like really affected the pacing of his matches and sort of the level of like cardio he has. And I think he's still kind of recovering from it.
Well, I find it interesting you said about this match, because I thought this was like, I would have agreed with everything you just said up until this match, where I thought this was like, this is the most classic Kota I thought we got all tournament.
Oh, I felt like it just like dragged on and on and on, like especially in the first 10 or so minutes. And I got really distracted, like I could hear him breathing, and like I could it really took me out of it, because like Shingo was working his chest, doing like all the stomps on top of the chest and all that sort of stuff. And I felt like, I don't know, like that was like a weird, not a weird decision. It makes sense considering in storyline, but it's like, I feel like he is still recovering and should not be doing matches. Like, I don't know if it's like, should not be doing matches of this, you know, style, but it's like, he's being sort of put in a spot to where he has to work to a certain standard, to a certain length. And I feel like he's still physically struggling with it. Yep. The other thing is like, the Kamigoi fucking stinks. I hate that move.
Oh, now. I do agree with you on that. It's a fucking pretty shitty finisher.
So in the Yano match, Ibushi hit Yano with a Kamigoi to the back of the head, and Yano no-sold it. And I was like, what the fuck are we doing? What are we, like, we're actually, you know, everyone has to take 8 fucking Kamigois to lose a match. You know, you have to go through the first Kamigoi, and they kick out, and then you know, put the knee pad down, and then you hit him in the back of the head. And it's like, I don't know what it is, and I might talk about this later with someone else, but it's like, it feels like a lot of the Ibushi matches feel like he has to get all of his shit in, especially recently. Mm. And it's like, okay, everyone has to go down to 3 fucking Kamigoyas, and I'm so done with it. And it's sort of like, it kind of like leans into the point of like emotional investment in a character and emotional investment of a crowd and sort of that impacting, you know, enjoyment of a match. You know, I think other people, you know, as you say, I'm probably like the number one Kota Ibushi hater, you know, in this particular sphere of, you know, wrestling Twitter or whatever. But it's like, I am so not invested in his character anymore. I think it, and so like, and that really hurts my enjoyment of this match and of like his G1 as a whole. I feel like he's kind of really, I'm just kind of over it. And if he wins this block, I might quit. I might actually be done for a while, because, you know, he needs like some sort of complication or some sort of, you know, challenge to go and face. He really shouldn't be coming back from an illness that bad and beating Shingo in a competitive match yet, I don't think.
Yeah, all that's fair. I don't know. I just didn't. I mean, I agree that the opening part was slow, but I just thought it was slow in the typical New Japan long match kind of way, which I don't know. It doesn't bother me really. But, you know, I mean, if the match had a flaw, that was obviously it. Yeah. But yeah, the rest of the match, I thought Kota looked like classic Kota, which I thought was, you know, good to see, because like you said, it wasn't always the case in some of his earlier matches.
Yeah, but
I don't know. I don't have as strong a problem with Kota as you do. That's very clearly. I mean, I don't think he's been the, like, I would put him like probably 4th best in the block or something, but like, you know,
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Behind Shingo. I mean, Shingo and Zach are ahead of him for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
And then it's like, how much do you like Okan? Ishii, maybe Kenta. Smith, Kenta. I mean, Kenta can't be that high for me with the bullshit, but you know. Anyway, I don't know, but I think Kota's been good. I definitely think I thought he was great in this match, but Shingo is just on another level right now.
Yeah, so. Shingo wins.
Shingo really, I thought, carried it probably.
You know, if Kota Ibushi is past his peak in this company, which I think he kind of is a little bit, Shingo is at the peak right now.
Yeah.
So. And he's killing it. So
there you go. All right. So that is our, but I want to be clear. I do not co-sign the idea that Kota Ibushi is like washed or anything. I think he's still a very good wrestler, but you know, it does kind of feel like maybe he does need a longer trip back to the top or something. Cause yeah, it does feel a little weird. He's just going to come right back and, you know, get right back to the.
It's like, what else can he do?
Yeah. I mean, he has that Naito problem where it's like they won the big one already.
Yeah.
And, you know, even Okada kind of. But, I mean, Okada, they just keep shoehorning him back to the top anyway, so.
Well, I think the Okada problem is a little different because Okada's just got put into the main event and has been there for the past 9 years. Whereas with, you know, with Naito and with Ibushi, I think Ibushi to a greater extent, like, they've won, like, every title in this company. They've won the New Japan Cup. They've won G1s. You know, they've won, you know, Tokyo Dome main events. It's like, what's new for them?
Yeah. I mean, now I kind of want to see Naito get his big injury. You know, return from injury is going to help him a lot, I think.
Yeah, so. I think Naito can overcome that because Naito has significantly more charisma than Ibushi does and can get by, like, can use that to get that emotional investment.
Yeah. But I don't know. Ibushi does feel a little lost in the shuffle right now, that is for sure.
Yeah.
So here's our A-block standings after night 9. Zack Sabre Jr. is still alone on top because he's the only one who's 4-1 for 8 points. The other 8-point wrestlers all tied for second. They are all 4-2. So it's Great Okan, Kenta, and Kota Ibushi. Tied for 5th, Shingo Takagi and Toru Yano, both 3-2. And then 7th place, Tomohiro Ishii at 3-3. And then tied for 8th, Yujiro Takahashi and Tonga Loa at 2-3. I will give my top. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I think you've got someone.
Naito is 0-9, yes. I don't read that off every time.
Sorry. I just had to.
It's like, what is the point? But yes, I get it. The top 5 matches after night 9, because there was a new addition here, actually. Mm-hmm. The 5th place match I still have is Okada versus Hiroshi Tanahashi from night 2, the only B-block match that's in the top 5. That is 4.25. Actually, 5 through 2 are all 4.25, so it's easy to say. 4th place, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Shingo Takagi. That is from night 3, also 4.25. 3rd place, Kota Ibushi versus Shingo Takagi from this show, October 3rd, night 9. 2nd place, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tetsuya Naito, October 18th from night 1. And still in 1st place, very difficult to unseat this one, Shingo Takagi versus Tomohiro Ishii from night 1. On September 18th, which I went 4.75 on. So definitely has quite the advantage there. And after tomorrow, we're exactly halfway through. We'll both blocks have wrestled, I guess, 5 matches. I will give a top 10. So I'll expand it on the Patreon to a top 10 matches of the G1.
You got to get that Okada Sonata match in there. You know, you can't do a top 10 with all that sitting there. You know?
Night 11 will be the next time the A block's in action. That will be Thursday, October 7th from Hiroshima. The card here, the starts from a non-tournament match with Ryohei Oiwa against El Desperado. Then your special singles match for the night, Hiromu Takahashi versus Kenta. That could be great.
That's going to earn.
The two of them are going to do so much stupid bullshit together. They're going
to
make so many great faces together. It's going to be great. Match 3, your first tournament match of the night, Kota Ibushi versus Tonga Loa, a first ever time ever singles match. I don't really see any reason why Ibushi wouldn't win that. Match 4, another first time ever singles match, Zack Sabre Jr. against Yujiro Takahashi. Again, Zack should win that pretty easily. Semi-main event, Toru Yano versus Shingo Takagi. Both these guys are at 6 points. They've only met once, and Shingo got the win. I would assume Shingo wins, but, you know, Yano can always beat anybody, but it just would seem weird for Yano to get the win.
Yeah, I mean, Shingo kind of has to lose 3 times, right? To not win the block.
Yeah, so he's lost.
He's lost twice.
He's lost twice already. Yeah, so he can lose one more.
Yeah.
The main event, Another first time ever singles match. This one I'm excited for. Tomohiro Ishii versus Great Okan. I think Okan's going to win. I think he's lost two in a row. I think he's going to get this big win over Ishii to keep him in the running. And, you know, the thing with Okan is he has to really have racked up points going the last night, since he's the guy who he was supposed to fight Naito on the last night. So, you know, the last night he's going to be just in a special singles match. So, you know, he's got to rack the points up before then. You know, this is a pretty weak A card. Obviously, he was originally supposed to have Kenta Naito to help it a little bit. But, you know, even then, I think it was kind of one of the weaker A block cards anyway. But it's really a one-match show here with Ishii and Okan. And then Hiromu Kenta as a non-tournament match is easily the second most anticipated match here. So we'll see what happens. Of course, the next G1 show is actually tomorrow. And just both these shows will be covered on the Patreon. So patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. That is a B block show from Cork and Hall with Okada and Sonata in the main event. Goto the Jobber against Yoshihashi.
Wow.
And, that's how they book him. That's zero points right there with Chase Owens.
He's going 0-5.
Taiji and Cobb and Tanahashi and Chase, Evil and Tamatanga. So I don't know. See what Okada and Sonata can deliver, I guess. It's another kind of one match show.
Tomorrow is also 3 on Abema. If you don't have to be subscribed to World.
Okay. Oh, it's free on Abema. That's true. I think it is free on World too.
It might be free on World too.
Yeah. I think any Abema shows, I think, also air free on World as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think Kevin Kelly was talking about that. All right. So, there is your G1. Let's move over now to the N1. Of course, yes. the Noah tournament. So, the N1, like we've been covering it every night of it along with the G1. I thought it was a very mixed bag of a tournament leaning into the final here. I mean, you know, I kind of went over that on the Patreon, but you know, it didn't peak super high for me. You know, my 4 of my top 5 matches were just 4 stars, and then, you know, after that was like a 3 3/4. So nothing like really got above that 4-star level. And then you know, there's a lot of stuff that I thought was very middling in the tournament as well. Even some outright bad stuff too. So, you know, it was kind of a mixed bag of a tournament. I will say the final night at least ended on a pretty strong note. So that was nice. I mean, the finals here, you know, the final match, which we'll get to, was awesome. Yeah. Absolutely outstanding. And the 2 semifinals were pretty great, too. The show opened with a 6-person tag. Now, I did not see this match because I had to skip something to get to be able to watch the rest of the show in time. But this was Akitoshi Saito, Manabu Soya, and Kendo Kashin defeating Masa Kitamiya, Kotaro Suzuki, and Daiki Inaba. Soya pinned Inaba in 10:56. Any thoughts on this one? I assume you saw it.
Yeah, I did see this. This was pretty lazy. I think Inaba and Kitamiya put in some effort, but everyone else kind of just sleepwalked through this. They're making Inaba take falls in matches with Saito and a junior in it, which bums me out. Like, they should be pushing Inaba a bit.
I've given up hope on them ever pushing it now.
I know. I'm dumb and still want them to push someone young, but I don't think it's going to happen. There was like a nice Soya Suzuki exchange. Like when Kitamiya tags in, the match immediately picked up, but he was in the match for maybe 2 or 3 minutes total. So very, very average stuff.
Mm-hmm. Match number 2, the first N1 semifinal. Kano defeated Kaito Kiyomiya. Big upset, obviously, in 15:35. Now, because I'm an idiot, I loaded up the cage match card to write down the card before I started watching the show and completely forgot that they would just list the final. Even though I'm on the card page without the results, they would just list the final there. So, of course, it would spoil the 2 semifinals. So, I'm an idiot. I've done that kind of thing a million times with cage match and somehow never learned my lesson. So I just saw Kanobu's Nakajima. I was like, fuck off. How did I just spoil that? And it was like an actual huge upset too. And I completely spoiled myself. So way to go, me. I just want to shout out to myself for being a fucking idiot. This match, Kaito gets a really fast start. Hits a running crossbody. It's a knee attack to the face and a snap German in quick succession. That sends Kano to the floor. Kano does recover out there. They brawl a bit. They head back in the ring before Kaito puts on a leg lock. That goes on for quite a long time, which was a little strange after the fast start. But Kano does finally make the ropes to break. Kano starts firing up with kicks, although basically Kaito, I guess, worked over the wrong leg, right? He was working over the left leg, and, you know, Kano kicks with the right leg, but he was selling it. Like, he was selling that base leg, because I guess it's base leg for the kick. So he would, like, kneel down to do the kick, and he would sell the left leg, but then he would just throw the kick. We get some high-speed exchanges, including some very nice running and diving elbows from Kaito. Kaito hits a basement dropkick. It perfectly sets up a really nice sliding knee to the face that gets a two count. He then goes up top for the double stomp, but Kaito cuts him off. He brings him down and hits a pair of European uppercuts. Kano fires back with his hard middle kicks, and they exchange back and forth as we get the 10-minute call. Kaito ends up trying an O'Connor roll, but Kano cuts back and pins him instead, to this huge stunned reaction from the crowd.
Yep.
I'm sure I would have been stunned too if I hadn't swore at myself like an idiot. But yeah, this was a really fun match that also sort of felt like it ended just when it was going to another level. And I guess they had to, because they, you know, Kano had to work another match. It can't go super long or anything. But yeah, it was still great, but I went 3 3/4, just below 4 stars. So, you know, pretty great match.
I thought this was fucking awesome. I really enjoyed this. The note I have down here is this match for me really highlights the difference between sort of like a what's the phrasing, like a minor star and a solid upper mid card worker versus a major star. So I feel like you know, no disrespect to Kano, even though he's a bit of a dork, but I feel like Kano is like the perfect star for like the Michinoku Pros or the Osaka Pros where he came from, and like in this company now he is like a one, you know, upper mid card sort of wrestler who does quite well, but it's like he doesn't have that thing that can make him be the ace of a company.
What?
You still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here, sorry.
Right, yeah. In contrast, Kiyomiya has arrived. Like, he has like got this new look, has like done wonders for him. He's been excellent throughout this tournament. He's been excellent throughout this particular sort of the past 6 to 12 months of this run. And I feel like that really was like sort of evident through their work. So Kaito, when he was like working the leg here, was like sublime, like so fucking good in terms of like really focusing in on that leg and, you know, putting all these knee breakers in and leg bars and really focusing on it. But it was like, it was a case where like, it wasn't flashy. It was, he is focusing on his leg to take out Kano's base leg in that particular spot. And I felt like that was really, really effective and engaging. In contrast, like, I feel like Kano, like, okay, yeah, he sold a bit for that leg, but I felt like there was like, okay, he needs to get his shit in, he needs to get the perfect foot bump in and all sorts of stuff as well. And I felt like that, you know, the match didn't suffer, but it just like really illustrated the difference between these two wrestlers at this point in their careers. The fact that you described it as an upset, like, I agree with, and I was like kind of shocked by when they like did the roll up, because I watched this live and I was like, oh shit, like what? They're actually doing that particular, you know, ending and actually having it. But I feel like there's now like, this match really portrayed like, okay, Kano's at this level. Kaito is now at a higher level than Kano. And that was the way in which that's really demonstrated how these two have grown over the past 3 or 4 years, where it's gone from Kano knocking out Kaito and, you know, really dominating him to now like, okay, Kaito's developed as this lead character in this promotion. And now it's like, okay, this is the perfect finish for a match of this quality, a match of this sort of like stature at this point in their careers. I thought this is like really great stuff. Go out and watch this if you didn't get a chance to see it.
There you go. The other semifinal match was Katsuhiko Nakajima defeating Masakatsu Funaki in only 8:38 with the vertical spike. Wow, I didn't realize it was that short.
Yeah.
This is exactly what you'd expect it to be. Super hard hitting, filled with some really great mat wrestling too. Funaki at one point he just fucking slaps Nakajima in the face as hard as he possibly can, before then delivering a PK for a two count. And then Funaki nearly taps Nakajima out with a cross arm breaker, but he's able to scramble the ropes to break. That leads in this really hard hitting kick exchange. Nakajima wins with a kick that Funaki sells, you know, like it knocked him out. Mm-hmm. And he's able to just barely kick out of the pin attempt, but Nakajima then just lifts him up, hangs him up there for a long time on the brainbuster, and hits it for the pin. Fantastic finish. He just knocked this man out with one kick, and then put him away with the brainbuster. And, you know, I can't remember the last time Funaki jobbed to anybody that cleanly. This ruled. I thought this was very slightly better than the other semifinal. I went 4 stars flat here. You know, it was very short again, but you know, it was, I thought it was awesome. And, you know, just really, really hard hitting. Everything looked great. They beat the piss out of each other. Just, you know, classic pro wrestling. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Like, Funaki is, what, 54 or 55? And probably can't work a 20-minute match at this point. So why make him work a 20-minute match? Like, this is 8 minutes, get in and out, kick the fuck out of each other. Perfect. Like, this was just
wanna,
like the...
I want to say really quickly, Funaki is 52. So how dare you?
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I hope it doesn't come off to me.
I was like, I would have guessed 50 probably, so I would have been, I would have undershot it, you would have overshot it, but if the price is right, I would have won because
Well, he's been working since like 1985, which is ridiculous. I felt like I love that the Fujita Funaki match from the last Block Night as well, but I was like, yeah, this was even better than that. And I really loved the, you know, sudden ending. Get on with it, you know. Fuck yeah.
Then we had Atsutoshi Kotogi losing to Ada in 9:49. So this match, you know, was to set up the junior tag title challenge with him and Osawa against Kotogi and Ohara that's coming up. It bored me for a bit, especially during Ada's heat period where not much interesting was going on. But I love Kotogi's comeback. He got to show really great fire, hitting these repeated hard lariats in the corner. That was great stuff. But Ada ended up pinning him with his vertebraker thing. And I don't forget what he called. And, you know, I thought it was pretty good. Not much more than that. I went 3.25. You know, nothing you got to run out to watch, but I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought this was, like, okay. Kotoge rules, and, like, he is the perfect person to put a new character in with because he has that fire and that sort of underdog babyface sort of vibe. I felt like this was like Ada very much working a character. I'm not very familiar with Ada from Dragon Gate. Like, that's the one big promotion I don't really watch. So I don't know if this is similar to the matches he has over there.
Yeah, but, he's been like a scumbag heel forever there, I think.
Okay.
I'm very, like, I have not watched Dragon Gate regularly since like 2018 or something. So I don't know what's happened the past 3 years, but definitely when I still watched Dragon Gate all the time, he was like Mr. Scumbag Heel.
Okay. So yeah, he was Mr. Scumbag Heel here too. That was good. And then he cut a promo afterwards, which you'll go into.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't write it down. I don't know what he said.
He basically just put Kotoge down for a solid 5 to 7 minutes. And I was like, come on, get on with it. Oh, Jesus.
I mean, very similar to Dragon Gate stuff. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not him playing any kind of nude character. That is for sure.
Yep.
Match number 5 was Hayata and Yoshinori Ogawa versus Daisuke Harada and Junta Miyawaki. It went to a double fall in 8:06. I didn't dislike this. You really hated this that much?
I'll get to it.
So it was to build up a GHC junior title match on October 10th with Harada challenging Hayata. I thought there was some really good action in this match. The finish, though, was weird as fuck. So Harada sort of did like this weird roll through into a German suplex bridge, but without the actual German suplex. It looked really weird. But maybe not bad. I don't know. It was kind of neat in a very unique way, but I'm like, why not just do a German suplex? Anyway, but somehow he has his own shoulders down as well. So the referee counts a double fall, making it a draw. I went 3.25. I thought it was pretty fun, but a very strange finish. do you have any thoughts on it?
I've been watching a lot of Ogawa over the past 2 or 3 months. We've been in lockdown, you know, I've been watching the old, you know, early 2000s Noah. Ogawa fucking rules, and he still rules. So in this match, I think he had, like, maybe 90 seconds of ring time.
Yeah, he didn't get any time in this match. Yeah. I'm not a Hayata guy either, usually. I thought he was fine here, but I'm not usually a Hayata guy.
So the contrast is, you team up Ogawa, who rules and has ruled for 30 years, and you team him up with the worst major league wrestler in the world, in Hayata. Yeah. And I'm just like, what are we doing? Like, Hayata is sloppy and boring, which is a bad combination for a wrestler. Couldn't really get into it. I felt the ending, like, you're right, it was creative, but it was also kind of lame and kind of, like, looked really silly. And, you know, they've been doing draws on the build-up to the junior title match. They did a 30-minute draw in, was it Yokohama, I think, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
No more fucking double pins. Stop it. Everyone's doing them now. Stop doing it, please. Wow. I beg.
After the match, Harada says he can't accept that decision, so he wants Hayata in a singles match right now. Again, I knew that happened based on the cage match card. I didn't know how it happened, but I knew they did go to a singles match. Apparently it's non-title. Anyway.
Yep.
So Harada and Hayata elbow each other right off the bat. Hayata walks out. Okay. I don't know what the point of that was. Yeah. So it went 0 minutes and 59 seconds. And the actual NOAH site says the match result was, quote, Hayata match abandoned. So obviously that's some English, but like, it wasn't a count out or anything. The ref, Hayata just walked away and the ref was like, well, I guess you lose. And it was very strange. I'm not even going to bother giving that a rating. It was very, very weird. A little bit of crack booking here from Nosawa. He always does one or two really weird things, and that was definitely the one here.
Yeah, it's like Nosawa. It's like sometimes he hits, sometimes he misses. This was, what are you doing? What? Come on, stop it.
And Harada does go after him afterward, but there you go. So the semi-main event was a six-man tag team match. Takashi Sugera, Kazuchi Sakuraba, and Kazuyuki Fujita defeating the Ems Alliance, Keiji Muto, Masato Tanaka, and Masaki Mochizuki. Sugera pins Mochizuki in 18-17 with the Olympic Slam. I thought there was a little slow paced at first, given these six guys in there and their combined age of approximately 10,000. Not that much of a surprise, I guess, it was a little slow paced. But some hard-hitting strikes, too. And the match ends with the three of them, you know, triple teaming Mochizuki, and leads to Sugera putting him away at the end of a surprisingly long match, I wrote, with the Olympic Slam. This was good. Also kind of drags me a little at times, but less because of anything they were doing, more in like, I want to get to the N1 finals and my pal Liam is waiting to record with me. Kind of like, why is this going on for so long? But yeah, I went 3.5. You know, I would have cut a few minutes for sure, but I still thought it was good. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So the old fuck pro offer match. congrats to Masato Tanaka for being the youngest person in this match at a sprightly 48 years old.
He's the youngest person? Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know why I wouldn't. That is shocking.
Yeah. So, like, everyone.
Do you have everybody else's age in front of you?
I do. All right,
let's go through it. 48. Right. Who's second?
Who is second?
I'm going to guess Sakuraba's second youngest.
No.
Okay. Don't tell me. Don't tell me then. Mochizuki.
I'm just getting up their birth dates. Just give me one second. Mochizuki is 51.
So he's second youngest?
Give me one second.
Oh, okay.
I need to get a tiebreaker here.
I wanted to get...
Mochizuki is not second youngest.
Sugera?
Yeah, Sugera is 51.
So obviously then Mochizuki's third. So he's 50, also 51. And then we got three guys left. Okay, I'm going to say Sakuraba has to be next.
Yep, 52.
Okay, then Fujita.
Sorry, I am wrong, actually. I can't read. Fujita is actually the second youngest person in this match. He's only 50.
What?
Yeah!
He looks like he's 70!
I know!
Okay, so Tanaka's youngest at 48. Fujita is somehow second youngest at 50. Then Mochizuki, then Sugera, then Sakuraba at 52.
Yep.
Because Mochizuki and Sugera both 51. And then Keiji Muto's what, like 56?
58.
Okay, I really undershot it there. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Disgusting.
So Keiji Muto is 6 years older than the second oldest person in this match.
That is correct.
In this very old fuck match.
Yep.
Wow. There you go. So I'm sure we confused the listeners. Let's just do it one more time.
Okay.
Muto's 58, oldest wrestler. Second oldest is
Sakuraba.
Sakuraba, 52. Then Sugera and Mochizuki are both 51, but Mochizuki's older?
That's correct.
And then Fujita's 50 somehow.
Yep.
And then Tanaka is the youngest at 48.
Yes, correct.
How is Kazuyuki Fujita the second youngest person in a six-man tag? That to me is even more shocking than the youngest.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus. Anyway, what a man.
Happy birthday to Fujita for next week. He turns 51 next week. So, you know, sprightly old chicken. I thought this was pretty good. Yeah, it was like an old fuck match. You knew what you're getting in. You know, you could watch these six. You go, okay, these two are going to pair up and this is what you're going to get. And, you know, Muto and Fujita threw each other the fuck around. That was fun. Then there was a Mochizuki Sakuraba kick fight. That was fun. And then, you know, Sugera and Tanaka threw each other around. That was fun. It's good stuff. But, you know, at that point in the show, it's like, okay, get through this. Let's get to the main event. Exactly. Come on.
And the main event was Katsuhiko Nakajima defeating Kano in exactly 20 minutes, apparently, with the Diamond Bomb to win the N1 victory. So Mara Fuji comes out, the GHC heavyweight champion. He comes out before the final, just says he's looking forward to defending his title against the winner. This lazy fuck who didn't compete in this tournament. God bless him. So Nakajima, he beats Kano all over ringside to start. He just like sends him in the railing a bunch of times. Back in the ring, they take turns with some incredibly hard soccer ball kicks. And then Nakajima at one point rakes Kano's eyes, I guess to show early on he's not going to be any nicer to him, you know, just because they're both in Congo.
Mm-hmm.
Nakajima's kicks... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And they both came out in Congo shirts.
That's true, they did.
Yeah.
Nakajima's kicks sound like shotgun blasts, like they always do. And Kano has strong kicks too, but just the sound of Nakajima's Nakajima's kicks during these exchanges just sound like he's absolutely killing Kano. Both guys dump each other on their heads with German suplexes at one point. They both no-sell. Then they both exchange high kicks at exactly the same time to very audible gasps from the crowd, and they both go down. Perfectly timed there. Great little sequence. Kano ends up walking, or running actually, right into a thrust kick from Nakajima when he stands back up. A great thrust kick. And then Nakajima hits a whole bunch more of these soccer ball kicks that sound like shotgun blasts for a two count. He then hits his big brain buster, but Kano just barely manages to kick out. Kano then avoids a punt kick from Nakajima. He avoids a second running kick. He grabs Nakajima by his ankle straight down to an ankle lock. And then he like just holds him by the ankle, holds him upside down, and hits this really hard kick. This sounded like a shotgun blast too, to what looked like Nakajima's neck or like his upper chest. That looked so painful. And then he went up top, hit his double stomp, but Nakajima kicked out. Kano locks on his sleeper. Nakajima is able to flip his way out of it. He then catches Kano charging in the corner. He sets him up across the top turnbuckle, hits a very hard knee attack to the body just before the 15-minute call, and then hits a running punt kick to the stomach as well while he's on the mat. Covers for another two count. He tries to go for the brainbuster again, but Kano just reverses right into his own suplex. That leaves both guys down. They take turns hitting very hard middle kicks to each other once again. They go really fast at one point during that exchange. Kano seemingly wins that exchange. Nakajima like staggers in the ropes. Then they start going at it again, and they start trading extremely hard slaps again. Kano knocks Nakajima down with his second one. The referee is checking on him. There's a super hard slap. It really just really the one that you knocked him down with, I mean, was a super hard slap. It fucking owned. Nakajima stands up. And Kano kind of tells him, this ends up being Kano's downfall. He kind of tells him, you know, you think you can slap me back? Go ahead and try. And you know, he starts hitting his own slaps to the face of Kano. And Kano at first is totally no-selling them and shrugging them off. But then as it goes on, Nakajima finally starts having an effect, staggers him. And then he just fucking drops him, hits the fucking the diamond bomb, which is sort of like a almost like a vertical spike brainbuster into the power bomb, I guess. And that gets... Oh, wait, did I describe
it's,
it wrong?
It's like the Death Valley driver into the brainbuster.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so this is almost like Kano's own arrogance cost in the match, where he had Nakajima right where he wanted him, but then he sort of let Nakajima start slapping him at the end there, like in a come on, what have you got sort of way, and just, you know, his own arrogance kind of bit him in the ass there, which I liked. They do hug each other at the end, though, so I guess there's no problems in Congo. Congo is fine, everybody.
Congo is
but
fine.
Yeah, this match absolutely fucking owned. These two fucking killed each other there. This is easily the best match of this tournament by a wide margin. It was better than all but one G1 match so far, obviously Ishii Shingo. I went 4.5 here. It may crack the very bottom of my match of the year list. I have to go through and compare it, I guess. But this is really outstanding stuff. Just these two guys absolutely beating the shit out of each other, and it absolutely owned.
So what else can I add to that? Jeez, you've really summed it up really well there. I think a couple of things. So the first thing that I noticed is, you know, on the show as a whole, Noah really upped their production standards and production values for this particular show. This show looked amazing. They've got this new 4K camera that they're using to get these like really nice in-focus shots of people coming out. And the first thing I noticed coming out as Nakajima came out, he has like, you know, he comes out from the Funaki match and he's got this massive fucking bruise all down his neck. And it looked so, so gross. Like with how badly he got beat up in that earlier semifinal match. you know, Kaito, no, sorry, Kano and, you know, Nakajima both work matches before this match on this show. So they come in a little bit tired, but it's like, they fucking brought it. Holy hell. Yeah, like they kicked, you know, there's one line that I think Stuart Fulton had on the English commentary where it's like, there are more kicks than a sneaker factory. And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, get in. They just beat the fuck image up for 20 minutes, and they can't really do this with anyone else in this company. Even though Noah is a hard-hitting, stiff, strong-style company, like, these two are the only two who can do this really strike-heavy, you know, laying it the fucking shotgun blast to the chest, shotgun blast to the back thing for this length of period at this level of intensity. Yeah, I love this, and this kind of cemented one of my thoughts that I've been having over the past 18 months or so, which is like, Katsuhiko Nakajima is the best wrestler in the world. He's got the charisma down now. He's got the match quality. He's got the, you know, the intensity. He's got the, you know, character. Like, he is, like, every time I see him on my screen, I instantly transfix. I want to see everything he does. And he, like, his mere presence in a match automatically elevates it massively. So, fucking so happy to see him go back to back. Happy. I'm going to be.
Oh, yeah, I forgot him last year. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to Nak. So
now he's the Kota Ibushi of Pro Wrestling Noah.
Wow.
There you go. I'm really going to trigger Liam.
Don't you dare insult my boy like that. This was so fucking awesome. I love it.
It's so funny, by the way. I realize I have the number one Western Ibushi hater this week, and then I have the number one Western Ibushi fan, Haley, returning to the show next week. real like duality of man. From the person who hates Ibushi, the person who loves Ibushi more than anyone on earth. So,
I am
Ibushi. I am Switzerland, I guess. I mean, I actually like Kota Ibushi, but yeah, you know, not like Naito, obviously.
It's like Kota Ibushi for me is when, you know, that meme when it says like, I want Katsuhiko Nakajima, and then, you know, the mother says, we've got Katsuhiko Nakajima at home. Yeah.
Well, see, then it was a great comparison then.
Yeah. Yeah, Nakajima fucking, he's on such a run right now. He should win. He absolutely should win the title match. And let's kick off this heel run at the Budokan.
Yeah, so overall, you know, great. Hard to call it anything less than a great show. All the N1 matches delivered. So, you know, definitely should go out and watch it. You can really skip everything else, I guess, other than the two semis in the final. You know, especially if you're short on time. I mean, there's nothing bad on the show. But if you really want to skip the other stuff, it's not really necessary to watch. My final top five matches of the N1, 5-2, all 4 stars flat. Fifth place, I went with Nakajima and Funaki from this show in the semifinals on October 3rd. Fourth place, I had Kaito versus Manabu Soya. That was for the A block on night 2 on September 18th. Third place, Kano versus Masaki Mochizuki. B block, night 5, September 26th. And then second place, Masato Tanaka versus Katsuhiko Nakajima. C block, night 1, September 12th. And of course, first place, the match we just talked about, Nakajima versus Kano in the finals from today's show, October 3rd. So 4.5 stars, very easily the match of the tournament. So yeah, you know, what had been I definitely liked last year's N1 better overall, but the finals here were great. So yeah. The finals kind of, I don't want to say it saved the tournament. I mean, it's a short tournament anyway. It's only 6 nights, so it's not like, you know, it was some struggle to get through.
Yeah.
But you know, definitely wasn't, it's not going to go down my list of favorite, you know, Japanese wrestling tournaments or anything, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't bad either, you know, and definitely peaked at the end, which is, I guess, what you want, so.
Yeah, it was a very easy watch for a tournament, you know, yeah. It was like an hour each day for 6 days or something like that.
It was,
so.
It was not the 2020 Champion Carnival. So.
Wow. And, you know, yeah. What do you think is the Budokan match on January 1st?
I don't know. They already said when they're doing their Fuji Nakajima.
That's next week.
Oh, next week? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They're at Edeon Arena in Osaka next week.
Okay. Maybe Nakajima Kaito?
So I think that could be one possibility. I think there's also someone who wasn't in this tournament who is due for a shot.
Who?
Someone who hasn't been in Noah for quite a bit, for like 6 months.
Okay, I don't know who you're talking.
You're blanking.
About. I'm blanking.
I'm talking about it's time for Go to come back.
Oh, I totally forgot about Goshi Ozawa.
Wow, forgetting about Go. Oh, disgusting.
So Go versus Nakajima. Yeah, that could be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. All right. So we can wrap things up here. I thought this show would go an hour, and instead we went an hour and 40. So
sorry.
That's not your fault. You want like 20 minutes on just sports teams I like and how and stuff like that. I mean, we did lots of stupid shit, but hopefully the people enjoy it. That's what everybody loves stupid shit. If I've learned anything from my many years on this earth so far, it is that people love stupid shit. So
yeah.
Anyway, Liam, anything you want to plug for the people?
Not really. You can find me on Twitter at Liam_D_McKen if you want to learn about like digital law and pure firsting and why NFTs are bad and all sorts of dumb shit.
NFTs are definitely bad.
Oh, they suck. Yeah.
I want to thank everybody, of course, for listening. Check out the Patreon for the ongoing G1 coverage, including tomorrow, Monday, October 4th, B-Block show. All throughout the week, we have more Patreon coverage. Next week, exclusively to the Patreon, I will be joined by Haley, a returning guest, who always have a good time with Haley when she's on. And she and I will be talking G1 Night 13 from next Sunday, or next Saturday, I think it's actually. Yeah, Saturday the 9th. Plus, Tokyo Joshi Wrestle Princess 2. So those are the two shows we'll be covering exclusively on the Patreon, myself and Haley. On the free feed, the schedule gets a little weird after that because the G1 schedule is so weird at the end here on these weekday shows. So it's a Patreon exclusive episode this coming Sunday, October 10th, then a free episode October 14th on a Thursday, and that'll cover G1's nights 15 and 16, Wednesday the 13th and Thursday the 14th. And then the following Thursday, October 21st, will be the final two nights of the G1 with voice wrestling Sean Sedor coming on to talk about that with me. And that'll be exclusive to the Patreon as well. So if you want to hear me talk about the finals of the G1 and wrap everything up in the G1, you have to subscribe. So it is patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. It's only $5. If you like the free episodes, if you've listened all the way to the end of the free episode, honestly, I don't know why you wouldn't enjoy the Patreon, because clearly you can handle me more than many other people. So yes, definitely check out the Patreon at patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. You can always follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase. Wrestling, of course, would not fit. And folks, thank you as always for listening, and I will see you next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.